Welcome to the Cashflow Ninja, the podcast sharing how to create and grow income streams and manage, multiply, and protect your wealth in the new economy. Are you tired of trading your time for money? Do you desire freedom today instead of retirement in 10, 20, or 30 years? I'm MC Lobsher, and this is the Cashflow Ninja. This is Cashflow Ninja. I'm MC Lobsher. Thank you so much for spending your most valuable resource, your time once again with me on the show. You can check out everything Cashflow Ninja at cashflowninja.com. And of course, if you haven't grabbed a copy of my new book, The 21 Best Cashflow Niches, Creating Wealth and the Best Alternative Cashflow Investments, you could do so at cashflowninja.com/21niches. That's 21 niches. When you do that, I'll throw in a digital version of the book, an audio version of the book, a curated library where I share the interviews covering the niches discussed in the book, so you don't have to listen to all 800 podcasts, and more bonuses. Again, cashflowninja.com/21niches. I've got a fantastic show. I've got Mitch Beinecker with me on the Cashflow Ninja show. Mitch, great to see you again, my friend.
You too, MC. Good to see you. It was fun when we were training together. That was a good day.
Yeah, I first met Mitch. So I was doing a little bit promotion for the book and was honored to be on his show, The Accidental Entrepreneur. We were in the studio in Trenton, where On Air Brands is situated. And by the way, they do the audio production for my podcast. We were there. We got to really hang out and had a lot of fun. So I've been looking forward to this. For folks not familiar with you and what you do, can you please share a little bit about your background and journey with them?
Sure. I'm a small business attorney, so I've been practicing for, pushing on 30 years now, helping businesses form, grow, sell, merge, succeed to the next generation. Sometimes there's estate planning and probate involved when people pass away, passing the business off to the next generation or through a buy-sell agreement. But I'm a transactional, drafting business attorney. That's what I do. I help people from, I even help them with, business plans as well. So I'm always drafting things, helping people put things in writing, handling their transactions, negotiating their leases, hopefully keeping them out of court. I don't go to court, but if I have to go to court, I bring a colleague in and pass it off to him or her.
So you're the person that helps to set up all these things up front, so it's not a complete disaster on the back end or as things unfold for business owners and for real estate investors.
Yeah, I do a lot of real estate work, a lot of asset protection, a lot of structures. So when your tenant or someone visiting the property trips and falls and cracks their skull open on the sidewalk because they're completely uncoordinated, they don't come back and sue you for everything that you're worth and can kind of segregate things a little bit. But sometimes it's a little bit harder when you now own 15 or 20 properties and they're all in your name and I have to move some things around. But yeah, definitely some pre-planning will go a long way. And it doesn't mean people shouldn't have insurance, but a lot of people think they have insurance. They don't need to do this kind of planning. A lot of people think they do the planning. They don't need insurance. You need both. So,
yeah, the best place to, the best time rather to buy insurance is not after you wreck the car, right?
Yeah. It's a little contrary to the whole concept of insurance, that would be the best way to buy insurance, right? If you could buy it after what had ever happened, you died, your wife could go buy $10, $20 million of life insurance.
There you go.
That would work.
You would have a market for that type of business, by the way, just between you and me.
I'm sure.
Now, one of the things that you and I talked about quite a bit, you are very well-versed in all of these high-level strategies when it comes to setting up businesses correctly, real estate, and we'll talk about that too. But one of the things that we had a discussion is, it's funny. Maybe this happens in your old age, but I get pretty excited to talk about taxes. I don't know why.
Yeah, me too. But, I don't know why either.
Yeah. But we talked about this quite a bit. And of course, this is what is on everyone's minds right now as we're seeing things unfolding with the current administration and with Congress. We're seeing a lot of stuff thrown out. We just had an infrastructure bill passed. So let's talk a little bit about the tax environment. What is going on right now? What are you seeing with regards to taxes? What are things that people should be paying attention to that they should know about that they probably are not? What are some thoughts that you have?
Sure. Well, I mean, the bill that I think is still in the House Ways and Means Committee in Congress and hasn't come out yet, I don't know what it's going to look like, but there obviously are a lot of changes that are pending and have been suggested or proposed. I mean, you can't write a check to the American people for billions and now trillions of dollars and, you know, not expect for it to come back to haunt us a little bit. So it just doesn't work that way because you're liquidating your economy and you're and that's why inflation's starting to catch up with us and so forth. So we got all those issues to deal with. So they're already proposing raising the taxes back up to pre-2017, I guess, where we had 39.5% and there was an excise tax. There are some little excise tax traps in there for, IRAs and things like that. If you have too much money, that's at a much higher level. But if you're somebody with some significant net worth, and the significance is like $22 million, but if this bill goes through, it's going to be more like 10 or 12, which still probably knocks out 99.9% of the population. But if you do have that kind of net worth, you may want to see your attorney before the end of the year, because there's going to be some opportunities that are going to be shut down if this bill, you know, does get passed. They're also proposing the change in some of the rules of trust planning that would make like some of the things we do with life insurance very difficult, if not impossible. So you would, if you buy a life insurance policy, it'd be hard to get it out of your estate. If you gave it to your children, you could, but most people want to put it in trust. And there's going to be some nuances with regard to that. So if you're thinking of selling, if you're thinking of doing that, haven't seen too many stuff about capital gains going away, but they're talking about raising those rates too. If you've been thinking of selling or you're thinking of moving some assets around, now this is the time to consider it. And some of the stuff you mentioned before when it comes to taxes, I mean, you and I don't get excited about paying taxes. You and I get excited about planning so we don't pay taxes. And deferring taxes and avoiding taxes. So there are some things that are still planning opportunities. They're not really on the chopping block, but you have to do them ahead of time. So I got a call one time from a guy who was like March, let's say, of whatever year. And he wanted to know if there's any way he could defer the taxes on a transaction he closed in November. Well, the problem with that was twofold. One is it was 4 months ago, and two is it was a prior tax year. So, you can't fix things. Taxes are voluntary. You're allowed to do planning. But it's called planning. So you can't go back and undo some of these transactions when you're already in contract or you've already closed them. So, don't think that, just because you're selling your family business and you're making $10 or $20 million and you have to pay $3 to $6 million in taxes, that you just have to pay them. There are ways to do it, but you have to do some pre-planning. So.
You have to make it a priority. I had a conversation with someone the other day. I'm like, when you do your own, from a strategic point, managing your own wealth, because a lot of folks make money. That's one skill. Then protecting it and managing it and multiplying it is a completely separate skill.
For sure.
It's a lot of work, by the way. That's why not a lot of folks do it. they get
it's
lazy.
It's And then it's something you have to keep up with and you have to make sure that all the T's are dotted. The T's are crossed and the I's are dotted, and you got to generally have to deal with lawyers and accountants because it's something that you can't necessarily do yourself. But it's for you and I, it's just a weighing of the costs, right? What's the cost of paying the tax versus the cost of deferring and or eliminating the tax and maybe doing better things with your money? There are some charitable strategies out there that would still put money in your pocket, maybe not as much without the charity, but certainly less than would be going to the government. So you're just kind of reworking some money to a charity and getting some tax benefits for doing it and getting some more benefits to you and your family. But, and a lot of people, I don't want to be bothered. Well, the IRS is not going to put your name on a building when you write them a check for $2 million when you die. So, but the charity will. But you got to do that stuff ahead of time. You got to think about it. You got to know what's out there, find different things. Some of them have very onerous rules, don't work at certain ages or certain properties and assets and things like that. But there's ways to convert them. So they do work.
Uncle Sam is not your uncle.
No.
Yeah, no, fair points. And here's what I would say to our folks too, is you have to be very intentional about this now. If you're not, if you're not laser focused on the taxes side of things and strategy and your wealth strategy, your wealth will be taken in the next couple of years, because the party's only going to get started. I mean, it might not go through in this bill, but I mean, they literally just fired everything that they could and saw what was sticking, whether it's capital gains tax. I mean, unrealized capital gains tax.
Yeah, I know. Which is that's
not a tax.
It's ridiculous.
That's wealth confiscation. That's literally... that's confiscating folks as well. Right. So,
and there'll be people that aren't liquid enough to pay that tax, you know, and they'll have to sell things.
Just think of an average family, middle class family that has a house that they now see an appreciation in, because we're creating so much currency, it's out of control and inflation is out of control. And all of a sudden they get a 20 to 30% increase on their house. And now all of a sudden, because it's unrealized capital gains tax, you know, the tax person's coming and saying, well, you owe us, you know, the taxes on that 20 to 30% increase in your house. So what can you do at that stage?
Right.
Refinance your house to pay your taxes? Or if you if you're not liquid you can't. Yeah, it's just, so they're throwing out all these things. And I always usually say is this gives you an insight to the thinking that's going on.
There's no
right?
question about it. It allows you to take a temperature of what's going on in Washington. Between you and me, I don't think things like that are going to pass. I mean, you never know. That one of the problems with it is that it becomes, how do you manage that? So your house goes up by 30%, right? And at the end of the tax year, it's up 30%. So you now have to pay capital gains. What happens next year and the house drops 20%? So do you get right now, you know, so it would be a very, it would be a crazy system. So I don't see that happening, but you and I, just like you said, you liquidate the economy, you're giving money away, you're printing money. The money's got to come from somewhere. Eventually it's going to come back to haunt us, our children, our grandchildren, through all this deficit spending stuff. And you're already seeing it. I mean, the price of gas is going out. There's a lot of things that are going up 15, 20, 30% in terms of cost. You know, they're talking average inflation, 6-7%. Well, something is above that and something's below that. So, you know, depending on what you're consuming. So yeah, we definitely have bumpy roads ahead. That doesn't mean, I think, between you and I, that there aren't opportunities. The people that do the planning and are strategic about it and are intentional, I like that word, will be in a position to take advantage of some opportunities. There's no question
about
it.
You definitely have to be intentional. So make tax priority and tax planning a priority for you and focus on it, because again, it'll be your biggest check. And like you said, the IRS is not going to put your name on the building. And Uncle Sam is not your uncle.
Bringing you to the army, I guess, and he's your uncle.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you have to do that. And the other thing is, tax is a big part of it. And the other thing that you hit on is this money creation. So debt is the other game, because we're in a debt based system. So if you have a bill that's 1.5 trillion or wherever the dust settles or settled, 1.5, they're going to need bigger bills in the future, folks, because it's a debt-based game. You're just going to have to create more debt to pay off the interest on the debt that's already there. And this will just continue to snowball. So like you said, there's opportunities to put yourself on the right side of this compound interest equation and not be on the wrong side of this. But you have to understand what is happening, what's busy happening. Keeping more of the money that you're making within your own personal business and investment economy is one strategy. And then obviously positioning assets through proper structure for what's coming, because this will just, I mean, this will just continue to roll, right?
Yeah. I mean, look, the that's what makes tax planning, right, more important. If your cost of living is going up, you want to keep as much as you can, and you don't want to pay, you know, all the costs that you have. But you know, and a lot of people that aren't intentional about it, like you said, it's just not their bailiwick. It's over their head, whatever. There's the internet now. Go do some research. Find assets that you can invest in that maybe won't produce taxable income, that can create cash flow for you, that can allow you to move money around and buy assets and create cash flows to pay off. That's why you and I like life insurance very much. It's a unique, very tax favorable asset that not only protects your family if you die, but has just happens to have favorable tax treatment where you can move money in and out of a bank account with the insurance company, and you can use that money and not pay tax on it. So, you know, and that's always on the chopping block too. But you know, the wealthiest people, the smartest people that are building wealth are using those kind of products, tax favored assets with real estate, because real estate is a very tax favored asset, to move money around. I call it not velocity money, but like the efficiency of money, right? You want to move your money around as efficient as possible.
Yep.
Because you want to use your money and not let someone else use your money.
Absolutely. So the first phase of this whole, I've seen different numbers. I know 25% of all US dollars were created in 2020. I was trying to get to the numbers now. I've seen 40% of all of the US dollars have been created since 2020, like 2020 and 2021. Regardless of what it is, it's just quite insane. So
big. I mean, yeah, you never talked about trillions before.
Yeah, it's the inflation's here. It was never going to be transitory. By the way, the marketing person that came up with that was just, I mean, as someone that has been in the marketing space, I'm like, you know, tip of the hat to come up with that, because who would believe that? Number one, number two, I mean, that's the best. You got to hand it to them. They came up with something, because these folks tell them, how do we tell them that inflation, they don't have to worry about inflation, right? We know that they have to, we're worrying about it, but how do we massage this? It's transitory. No, folks, it's never going to be transitory. And of course, the folks with no assets are the first ones wiped out with this.
Right.
Because they don't have enough assets. They just see the price inflation.
Right.
Now you have folks with some assets, some businesses, small businesses, some real estate. They need to be protected. And that leads into the part of getting proper asset protection structures. What would you recommend to folks getting started right now, whether it's a business or whether it's real estate? With businesses, maybe you can touch on how they protect themselves and their businesses. And with real estate, at what point do you take the property out of your name? You know, I know folks buy properties and it's in their own name and then they transfer it over. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that.
Sure. I get a lot of people that call me, you know, they're a young couple, they're starting out, they're buying a home. It's probably not the best time to start doing trust planning when you're just at the early stages, have a little kid, you don't have a lot, you're looking to accumulate money. But I would know the rules in your state about your house. Every state's different. Some houses are completely protected, some aren't. In New Jersey, they can't force you to move, but if you got a judgment against you, it could attach to your house. So if you want to refinance or sell it, they could take that money away from you. Florida, you can't, for example, they have homestead protection down there. So if you're getting started to build assets and build wealth, you kind of want to pay attention to, let's use the word, siloing or walling off certain assets from each other, right? Because certain assets can expose you to liability and other can't. So if you're operating a business and you also own the location in which you're located, say it's a condo or something, an office condo, you don't want to have the company, the corporation, the limited liability company own both the shares of the business and the real estate. The real estate should be in a separate entity, an LLC, a corporation of some sort. And that would be a discussion with your CPA based on local tax rules and legal rules. But if there are some tax advantages to doing that, right? Your business can pay rent to your LLC that owns the building. That does two things. One is now you have a rent roll for the property that you own. So if you go to sell it, you can say, oh yeah, this is the cash flow of the business. Same for refinancing, things like that. Want to build up the asset. And on the business side, you know, a lot of people, when they build a small business, they don't really say, hey, maybe I'll sell this someday. What am I doing to build wealth? It's just a business for them and they're out there. And then when they get 10, 15, 20 years down the road and they're like, you know, I think I'd like to sell this business, transition to something else. They haven't positioned the business to do that. So those kind of things where the business shows that it can pay in a rent and still pay the owner and still pay all the other bills is a good thing for the business, even though he's paying himself, right? And there's some tax leverage to doing that too. But most importantly, it walls off the assets from each other. So if the business is sued for some reason, you know, some business dealings that it has or some harassment suit or whatever it happens to be, the assets that are on the table are all the assets of the corporation, right? So if the corporation also owns the building in which you're in, it's up for grabs. Now, it might have a mortgage on it or whatever, but there could be equity there that it's exposed to. If the building's in a separate LLC and that's the landlord and the business is paying the landlord income, if somebody falls and hurts themselves in the building, they can sue the landlord. They can't sue the tenant. They can't sue the corporation. Now, there are some exceptions. That's right. You can't commit fraud. You can't, you're right? You can't, you don't want to treat your business as your personal big piggy bank because then people could access your assets anyway. So you got to be legitimate about it and you got to be honest. But if you're running, if you're doing it legitimately and you're following the rules and you're not doing it to defraud anybody and steal things from people, then yeah, generally it's going to give you protection. If you are buying multiple assets over time, so now you're buying a couple of two-family, four-family homes. And by the way, I don't know about where you're located, but if you, a lot of times with the banks, if you're buying a one or two family home, four family home, what the broker is going to tell you is if you own it personally, I can get you residential mortgage, residential rates, four family or less. So that's why you'll see a lot of people buying the house in their own name and then transferring it over after they close. There are some risks to that. I mean, technically it accelerates the mortgage. I've never seen a bank do that. Because actually, if you think about it, their collateral hasn't changed. You're still personally liable on the mortgage. The building is still collateral on the mortgage, and you know, so that doesn't, you're not defrauding the bank in any way. But they could call the note, and you want to make sure your insurance is in the right order, whatever. But that's why you find those things to transfer. If you could do it from the get go, that's, you know, better. I have a personal situation. I owned a four family house. We had it in our name. The market was crazy. We were going to transfer it. As a matter of fact, I think I've done all the paperwork. This is like within 30 days of closing. And the market was so crazy that we got an offer on the building that was so high. And I said, you know what, for me to transfer it and then deal with title and then pay the extra fees. And then I got to let's just close. Well, it turned out that there was a tenant that filed a lawsuit like within that 6 months, 8 months of closing. And It was a situation with a minor and lead poisoning and things like that. I don't know if it's legitimate or not, but I ended up getting sued personally. I had insurance. The insurance company dealt with it, but the new guy got sued. I got sued. The old owner got sued. And by the way, 18 years later, this kid who was a baby is now an adult and he's now suing also. And I'm still named in the suit because I never transferred into an LLC because it was so fast. It is what happened. Insurance company still defending. I don't have them anymore, but I don't own the building anymore, but they're defending. We'll see what comes of it. But yeah, so these things are real world, real life. People try, and some of them are very good at it, to take your stuff. That's what they're trying to do. They fall on your property intentionally. What do they call them? Rats out there that want to take your stuff. So you definitely want to do that planning ahead of time and not wait too long. And, you know, don't come to me when you got 15 properties and you're like, what are we going to do? And by the way, it's going to be $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 worth of work, but you got to protect yourself, you know? So,
yeah. Now, to your point, in times of economic booms, there's lawsuits. People still sue each other. And in times of economic decline, and right now, for the majority of people all across the world, I'm talking the majority of the population, the economy sucks. It's tanking. Yep. So you are in a situation where, you've sort of got a Hunger Games society forming right in front of you, where you're going to have, I mean, they're already dressing crazy at the capitals all over the world, but
no, everybody's on their own, you know?
But, and then the rest of the folks. So what's going to happen? You're going to get sued. Business owners, all of a sudden, even though you're a small business owner or a real estate investor with one or two or three properties, you're a target because you look like you have money and you're rich. And there are folks that are going to, they're going to try and take it from you. Right.
No question about it. By the way, there's an entity that I like very much. It's called a Ceres LLC. It's available in Delaware, Nevada, and I think Wyoming or Oklahoma, maybe Alaska. It is a very good way for real estate investors who are buying and owning multiple properties to basically manage one LLC but have them all separate for liability purposes. So you don't have to, you get one tax ID, one, let's say, holding company, and then you have, you know, 1, 2, 3 Main Street series, you know, 12 College Ave series, you know, 1 Lyndon B. Johnson Way series, and you'd put the different properties in those little series. That's a 3-page agreement, no filing, as long as you keep separate books and records. So you could, let's use QuickBooks, for example, you could subcategorize. You could create a category for that one property, and then any expenses and income that are related to that property, or, you know, that the name of the property, colon, whatever those things are, and you can run separate reports and keep it separate. And that allows, that's makes it much more manageable when you have multiple properties. And it's not available in every state, but you can be in New Jersey, own properties, have a Delaware LLC. It's just got to be filed doing business in the state in which the real estate's located.
Gotcha. What are you seeing with business buying opportunities right now? Because it looks like a lot of folks are buying a lot of businesses, selling a lot of businesses. Yeah. What's going on there?
Yeah, definitely. And I'm not dealing with, you know, $100 million transactions. I'm not with the large law firms. I'm a street lawyer, for the lack of a better term, dealing with small businesses. I have a fair amount of clients that are scooping up smaller businesses, people that are looking to retire, people are like, you know, I just don't want to do this anymore, to get restarted after the pandemic. And they want to build their business. Some of them are related to the main business. So they're picking up locations. They're picking up sometimes just client lists. It's just customer lists and a little bit of inventory, right? And some of them are picking up locations, completely separate businesses. Some businesses complement other businesses. I have some people that had sold a business. They were looking and they went through some business books and looked at, I mean, I had a guy looking at everything from a welding company to a cabinet maker. We weren't even related, but he's a business guy. Like, he knows how to run a company. Doesn't matter really what they do. Not particularly. And, you know, he bought the company, took it over, and we assigned the leases and he had the employees, and he's improving the efficiency of the business, building the business, starting different lines, doing things that the owner, who was older, didn't really want to do. It's not that he couldn't do it, but there's a lot of people out there that are like, you know, I used to run an academy for kids in middle school and high school called the Young Entrepreneurs Academy. It's a group out of Rochester, but they had something we did with our Chamber of Commerce for a number of years. And we would go visit, we'd go field trips and visit businesses. And the kids, they were very astute about it. You know, they're like, you know, somebody would say, well, why doesn't this guy grow his business? He's got a retail location. He can have multiple locations. And the kids would say, you know, some of the kids would say, well, maybe he doesn't want to. You know, he's 62 years old and he doesn't want to do it. He's paying his bills, and, you know, that's fine too, you know, but, you know, there's a lot of definitely opportunities. So as a result of, I think, the pandemic making people reevaluate the quality of their life and what's important in the world. And also, between you and me, and I think we spoke about this last time, cash flow hides a lot of things. So if you have a business and cash flow is coming through the door, you may be making no money and you have no idea.
Yep.
You know, you and I evaluate real estate all the time. And, you know, you look at these things and they say they're throwing off 7%. When you're done putting in the real numbers, it's not even turning a cash a profit.
Right.
So when the pandemic hit and in a lot of businesses, cash flow completely stopped, a lot of people realized that they just had a lifestyle business. They didn't really have that. They were not real business owners. They were just, they owned a company they happened to work for at the same time. And I think a lot of them are, you know, cashing out.
That's it. That's what we're seeing too. A lot of folks that survived 2020, their businesses are still, I mean, managed to scrape through. They're looking at this just going, all right, I'm out. I'm done. I'm mailing this in. I'm retiring and selling it with seller financing. I mean, one of the best times ever to buy
stuff. Absolutely.
Yeah. Great time to buy businesses with seller financing. And to your point, we did talk about it. Cash flow. People, you know, think of cash flow in a different way of just returns and that kind of stuff. But the way that it's managed and it's coming into a company and a business and what's the efficiency of it inside of it. There's a lot of folks that, you know, their businesses blow up, but they go bankrupt.
Yeah.
Because of cash flow.
Because they're bringing in $10 million and then I don't have a profit. Spending 11.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, so it just comes back to in the focus and intentionality. But yeah, there's a lot of opportunities. And I mean, a lot of businesses, you know, especially like, you know, I'll throw out one that I'm seeing too. Maybe you've got a couple of other ones that you're seeing right now, but like plumbing businesses, electrician businesses, all those businesses. Because of course, we've had generations now of young folks being sold on, you just have to go to college and that's the only thing to do.
Yeah, and now all of a sudden, really dipped.
The trades dipped. And guess what? Cities are old. The pipes and houses are old. The pipes are popping. Electrical wiring needs to get done. And of course, there's a lot of new builds, but you don't have enough folks in that space. So I see a huge opportunity for folks.
There's definitely an opportunity, yeah.
Yeah, to go into the trades and those type of businesses.
Yeah, there's no question about it. Well, I also think that, you know, I don't know. I mean, look, we're coming up with a lot of technology and some of that's low voltage wiring or whatever, and electricians can wire that stuff and Bluetooth, but I don't think we're going to have like wireless electricity running through our house. That's not going to happen. Too dangerous. Yes. And, you know, with the exception of like PEX and flexible piping, we're still going to be running water into our house. I mean, we're human beings. We need to eat and drink and live and defecate and get it out of our house and, you know, deal with the sewers and stuff. And, you know, that's the reality of it is. So that's not going anywhere. It's just the way the techniques that they use that are improving and how they can do things and monitor things. And I mean, I don't know, maybe in the future, your plumber will have technology in your house where he'll know when a pipe bursts or something and he can send a crew out immediately, you know, but that doesn't mean that there's no plumbing. We're not going to have plumbing.
No,
you know? So, right. So
you'll have smart pipes.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, everybody always, you know, there's this whole feeling about the blue collar worker versus the white collar worker. But you could be a white collar business owner. I know a guy who left corporate America and he started a handyman franchise. I think he does some of the work, but I don't think he does much. He's got good guys that are working for him. He runs the businesses, manages the job, does the business development, manages the money, does what business owners do. You know, he's a good friend of mine, a client. When I call him and I need something, he doesn't show up at my house. I might talk to him and text him because I know I'm his attorney, but he doesn't show up at my house to fix a faucet that I need fixed. My wife's got a problem. He sends his guys out to do it. So there's definitely an opportunity to do that because I think a lot of the, you know, there's this dichotomy between the blue collar worker and maybe a lack of business training and the business owner and the white collar worker and a lack of, you know, trades training to be able to really do things, being a, you know, carpentry work, plumbing, electrical, whatever. And the marriage of those two can be very good if you structure the deals properly. And like you said, you may be able to do it with very little money down. Because the way these businesses are run, you can't even get financing just because looking at, they're going to go with their financials, not yours, unless you're independently wealthy.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. No, huge opportunity. I see there for folks that are willing to work hard and build something because like I said, two generations have been brainwashed into it, you know, just go to college is a thing. And now I can't figure out what the value proposition is that a college has right now. Besides,
I don't think,
you know, four years of partying
up, right? Yeah, I don't look. I've always had this argument with my wife. I don't think, and listen, my son's graduating Indiana this year. He's an informatics major. It's a hot area of computer science. I'm sure he's going to do real well. It's great. My daughter just started Maryland. She's interested in medicine. We'll see what happens. And then my young one's in high school, so she's going to go. So I'm a big advocate of education. But I think dollar for dollar, if you measure out success and investment in human capital, there is zero correlation. There's zero correlation. There's people that have gone to college and spent a lot of money and did real well. There's people who spent a lot of money, come out and they're making a quarter of what they paid for college, never going to pay their loans off. And then there's some that never went to college and they're, you know, very, very, very successful.
Yeah.
You know, I won't say wealthy. That's a definition for what you consider success to be, but you don't have to go to college to be successful. And you don't have to be successful to go to college. So I think we have to rethink, you know, kind of our whole educational system, because between you and me, there is no way if you and I are running a business that we would have to charge somebody $80,000 to come and attend our university. We would want to charge them $80,000 because then we could put up new buildings and have all these wonderful things and special things for the kids and great dorms and, you know, sushi bars and everything like that. But come on. I mean, come on. You got to spend $250,000 to send a kid to college when he's going to come out making 75 if he's lucky.
Yeah, and they can't adapt to the new skills that are going to be needed in this new environment. You know, if you think about
right.
how quickly things are moving, you know, if you go to college this year, 2021, you come out, 2025?
Four. Yeah.
2024. It's a completely different world.
Well, now it is. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it changes so quickly, week to week, month to month. So yeah, no, absolutely. Education has taken on a different meaning. It doesn't, you know, some of the most educated folks that I know because of their skill sets, their capabilities, relationships, like you said, right. never attended college. It was self and it was learning. Hard right. school
or
not.
Or they went to right? school while they're working, right? Or they went exactly. to school locally, or they didn't run up a $300,000 bill. They had, you know, they came out with no loans and they figured ways to get it done. So I'm not suggesting people should get educated. I'm saying that you don't have to go to the top universities and have huge amounts of debt coming out and have the stress. Now, is it right for some people? Sure. Or are you coming from a wealthy family where it doesn't matter? They're going to pay for you? Great. Does it help if your degree said Harvard versus Union County College? Yeah, probably. Not in all cases, though. Yep. You know, if you wanted to go and be a law professor and maybe eventually get on the Supreme Court or become a federal judge, Yale's a good place to go. It's probably a good place to go undergrad if you want to be a professor in general, right? But if you don't want to do those things and, you know, you're going to have a huge debt and maybe struggle through college because it's friggin' ridiculous at those levels, maybe it's, you know, maybe it's okay to look at some of these great schools that may offer you money, that make it easier to get started, that have really, really interesting programs all around the country that are out there that can't be heard because of all the big endowments and the big schools that are like, oh, those are the top 15 or 20 you should always go to. There's some great programs out there
the tax-free hedge funds.
Yeah, exactly.
The university endowments. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they're nuts.
Let's switch gears here for a second. Yeah, exactly.
Another show we could talk about college tuition.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Let's switch gears here for a second. Some other strategies that you and I have talked about. Maybe this one will be useful for some of our listeners out there. Installment sales.
Yeah.
A very good tax strategy. Maybe you could talk just a little bit about that and how that's just another tool in a toolbox that should be included as part of your overall strategy, but it's a way to navigate some taxes.
Sure. Now, if anybody's looking it up and they want to do some research, the term would be monetized installment sales. And then we're talking about the sale of businesses, because if you're selling real estate, there's a code section of the Internal Revenue Code 1031 that allows you to defer and roll over your basis to a new property, exchange one property for another, not pay tax. There are ways to do that through a pooled effect called Delaware Statutory Trust, where you can put the property into a trust and it's kind of like a big mutual fund, more costs involved. But if you can't find a property, you can do that. But monetized installment sales kind of did the same thing for businesses and allow people to defer the tax that they pay. So if somebody comes and buys your business, let's say for $10 million, and you've depreciated everything, so you're basically paying tax on $10 million. If they very often, somebody might say, well, listen, I'll tell you what, I don't have $10 million now, and I want to run this business. I'll pay you $100,000 a month, which would be $1.2 million a year, right? Until this is paid off, till I've paid you in full. There may be an interest component to it and so forth and collateral and whatever. The tax advantage of that could be, it's not necessarily an advantage if you're paying the same taxes over 10 years versus today, but you do have use of your money differently, is that you're going to pay tax as you receive the money, right? It's an installment sale. You don't pay tax on the $10 million. Now, by the way, before they had the installment sale section, you would pay tax on the $10 million. That's why they passed that. So that's one way of putting off the tax, but you also don't get the money now to use. So there was a couple of companies, and by the way, this is planning. This is not based on a tax code. It's based on multiple tax codes, tax opinions, attorney, legal letters. They have been audited. I don't know of any cases where they were disallowed, but these strategies are always being looked at by IRS.
Yeah,
they never understand them, but they're always like, I don't know how these guys aren't paying tax, but I'm going to figure this out. So So it's not for everybody. Okay. But the worst that can happen if you rely on professionals, in my opinion, is you might end up paying interest on the tax that you would have paid. Probably not penalties unless you were just totally reckless about it. Okay. So what they're doing is basically is they're taking your business and they're transferring it to or loaning it. They're using it as collateral for a loan where you get the money. Somebody else kind of manages it. There's an intermediary. You get all the money today, but you don't pay the tax for 30 years. It's a deferral situation. Now, in 30 years, you're going to have to pay the tax. So you better plan on that or strategize for it or buy some life insurance, you know, something like that. But that's basically what you're doing. You're taking money up front, paying the tax later on. And there's some nuances too. You got to be working with an intermediary who knows this stuff. There are some very egregious people that work in this space. You got to be careful who you work with. Talk to an attorney who knows this space. Talk to an attorney who works with people that they trust, because ultimately they're kind of taking your money. But it's an interesting arrangement, to say the least. So if you're going to pay a lot of tax, you're going to want to get a legal opinion from a qualified attorney. You want to put the whole thing together properly. It might cost you, you know, $50,000, but it's not going to cost you millions. So that's monetized installment sales. It's basically the ability to defer the tax on the sale of a business where you get the money up front and pay the tax in 30 years.
Fantastic stuff. Now, thank you for sharing that. I knew my listeners would find that helpful. Now, a core message in our show is to leave our families, communities, and the world better than we found it by passing down a mindset, values, mm-hmm. and principles to future generations, not just money. So if you cannot pass on any money to future generations and we're only allowed to pass on three principles to them to build wealth and achieve happiness and success, what would they be?
That's a good one. You didn't give me a heads up on that one there. Let's see. What would I say? Well, one of the things is that I'm a big believer in, you know, keeping a level head. Because things are usually not as bad as they seem. And if you treat things as opportunities versus obstacles or failures, you probably find the opportunity in there, right? Even if it's a learning opportunity. But, you know, I think a lot of people jump to conclusions. This isn't going to work. Remember that townhouse we bought? We had to plummet out at 3 o'clock in the morning. We had to evict the tenants. And that's their only experience in real estate. They owned one property. They had a bad experience. Owning real estate's the worst thing you could ever do. So, you know, I would go in with expectations of, hey, this is the first time. So I'm not expecting it to be the greatest. If it is, great, then you're really excited. But if you run into obstacles, you're like, yeah, I kind of thought that would happen. Or I kind of thought that would be difficult. Or that's normal. It's okay. And I think that we tend to miss opportunities when we're too stressed out over a situation that was probably inevitable to happen anyway. So that's the one thing I would say is that, you know, you just got to kind of keep things in perspective and accept it as the first time, because you always get better at it the second time, right? You buy your first property, you make a lot of mistakes. The second time you understand the closing process, you know, the things you'd look for differently in a property. And over time, I've reviewed so many properties with clients and on my own and with real estate groups that there's things that I look for when I go into a property that stand out that I didn't see those 20 years ago when I was looking at properties. And same with you, right?
Yeah.
So that's the first thing. What were two other things that I would say? I would say, yeah, definitely don't overinvest in your education, right? Find ways to get the education you want without putting yourself in so much debt that you're way behind the eight ball. Obviously, if you want to become a doctor or something like that, there's training you have to go through. So some of it's unavoidable, but that's a higher paying profession. So that's probably my second one. The third one, what would that be? Maybe if you're a teenager or you're in like your 20s, listen to older people that have experience. Don't think like, oh, come on, you don't know. The world's a different place. It's not. It may be handled differently. Maybe I'm not as good with technology as my kids are with different things. But, you know, they call me all the time and ask me questions. And I'm like, well, didn't you just Google that? I mean, they're like, oh, yeah, I can do that. Or, you know, something my son said the other day, something in the car. It was like something happened and I flipped a switch. It was like something on the dashboard. I flipped it on and he looked at me, he goes, "You can do that?" I'm like, "Yeah." But then I realized I've been driving a car for 30 years. I probably didn't know whatever it was we were doing when I was his age either. I remember, yeah. I'll tell you a funny story and then I'll let you get back to everything. My daughter was a young teenager, or maybe, and she's into writing. She's a journalism major, even though she wants to go to medical school. She's a great writer. She writes all kinds of stories and stuff. So she wanted to get a typewriter. She wanted to get a real typewriter, "Daddy, I want a typewriter that like types. I don't want these computers and whatever." So she goes, does all of her research. She finds, I don't know when you were growing up, but we used to have to take typing. We didn't have keyboarding. There was no computers. Mm-hmm. We had those, right? Those typewriters that your knuckles would like crack and you'd have to hit the return, right? To get to the next line, right? Whatever. So she buys this vintage. It wasn't a vintage, but it was like a replica, right?
Yeah.
So she gets this thing where the keys like stick, you know, if you type too fast and everything. So I said to her something stupid, like, you know, I'm surprised that you really wanted to get that so unique. Why you didn't get electric typewriter? Whatever she was doing, she dropped what she's doing. She looks at me, she goes, "They make electric typewriters?" And I go, "Yeah. You didn't know that? I thought you were doing all this research." She goes, "Why did you tell me that?" But, you know, we're smarter than we get credit for. Definitely.
Absolutely. The school of life, life experience. So Mitch, where can folks follow you? Where can they stay informed of all the many projects that you're involved in?
They certainly can go to my website, beinhackerlaw.com. I think if you do a search for Mitchell Beinhacker, I can't imagine you come up with any others. And I'm redoing that website. It's going to be relaunched soon. We're redoing rebranding and doing some stuff. If they want to learn about the podcast and the guests I have, it's available on Apple and Google and Spotify and Stitcher and Amazon and all those things, just like yours is, I'm sure. And we don't have a website for the podcast at this point, but there is a Facebook page, LinkedIn page, Instagram, I guess Twitter. I don't know. The services put it out there when we post. So that's a good way to find me. And as a matter of fact, you can put it in the show notes. I also have a link tree. You can put the address in the show notes and that lists all of my links. So on my social media and the practice of social media and things like that. And there's a blog and they can always read things. If they follow me and get on our mailing list, there's a book coming out. It's called 10 Ways to Get Sued by Anyone and Everyone. So it's about how not to get sued and the things that you should do in your business to protect yourself. That's probably coming out. Well, I used to say fourth quarter of this year, but it doesn't look like it. So first quarter next year. Plus I have some eBooks that come out and things like that. If they get on the mailing list and follow what we're doing. That's probably the best way to get a hold of me.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing all this knowledge with myself and my listeners. It's been a blast having you on, my friend.
Thanks, MC.
And thank you to you, the listeners and viewers, for spending your most valuable resource, your time, once again with me on the show. Remember to grab a copy of my book, The 21 Best Cashflow Niches. It's available on Amazon or just go to cashflowninja.com/21niches. As always, until next time, live infinitely.
This presentation is for educational and informational purposes only. The information being presented and considered does not consider your particular financial objectives or situation, and it does not make personalized recommendations. This material is not intended to replace the advice of a qualified tax and legal advisor or other qualified professionals, and you should not use the information in place of a customized consultation with a licensed professional regarding your specific personal financial objectives, situation and needs. We believe the information provided is reliable, but we do not guarantee its accuracy, timeliness, or completeness.